by a friend that was a friend of Conahan's. And so they put the whole thing together. It's true that there was a new facility needed. It's also true that, to the best of our knowledge, that the county wasn't going to build a new facility, or at least at that time. So it made it very easy for them to create this new facility. At the time, for-profit prisons and detention centers were something that was becoming more in favor. So that's where it all began. And Civarella, who sent kids away at very high rates during his entire term as the juvenile court judge, it seemed to make sense that they would have the facility more full than not, just based on his actual track record.
So
I think
they were found guilty of accepting $2.8 million in illegal payments. And I misspoke. It wasn't that Conahan, the president judge, was pardoned. He was granted clemency, right? He was one of the many people who was considered to have committed nonviolent crimes. And during COVID, as an older man, he was released to home. And now he was granted clemency by President Biden, along with the 1,500 other people.
That's right. Right. He had about two more years to go, I think, on his sentence. One thing that's lost in all this, which Sandy can attest to, is that, you know, kids need special care and treatment. When they're growing up, they have lots of issues, now more than ever, and literally now more than ever today. But back when this story all took place, I spent a lot of time with Sandy and the other kids and families, and it had changed my life. And I have children. The juvenile justice system was broken then. It's broken now. The way that the difficulty in getting mental health for kids, it's problematic, and it's susceptible to the power of the courts. And I think that is one of the things that isn't talked enough about. We had another kid that we followed, Charlie Ball Savage, who was doing well. He tried. He struggled, and he also was jailed for a long period of time. And he missed his prom, he missed birthdays, and he missed so many things. And he never got the attention and care that he needed. Instead, he was locked up. And eventually, he died of a drug overdose because he never got the care he ultimately needed and deserved.
Well, Robert May, I want to thank you for being with us. It makes you question whether these are nonviolent crimes these judges engaged in, putting away thousands of children, some as young as 8 years old. Robert May, director of the documentary Kids for Cash. And Sandy, thank you for taking this time and, most importantly, sharing in this very painful moment for you with everyone. It is a warning to all what you had to say today. Sandy Fonzo's son, sentenced in the Kids for Cash scandal, ultimately took his own life. To go back to Democracy Now!'s coverage 10 years ago of the Kids for Cash scandal, you can go to democracynow.org. And again, the suicide hotline is 988. Coming up, as President Biden enters his final month in office, we'll talk to Astrid Taylor of the Debt Collective about how Biden could deliver debt relief to millions of student borrowers. Then we'll look at a new film called The Bibi Tapes. Why can't it be played in Israel? It's about Netanyahu, who's on trial for corruption. Stay with us.
Everybody leaving. Why do we have
Taking Time by The Creation. Producer Shel Talmy passed away in November at the age of 87. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. As President Biden enters his final month in office, he's facing calls to grant more debt relief to millions of student borrowers. According to the White House, the Biden administration's approved $175 billion in student debt relief for nearly 5 million borrowers over the past 4 years. But advocacy groups, including the Debt Collective, have urged Biden to support broader debt relief before Donald Trump returns to the White House. The Debt Collective recently launched a campaign to pressure the Biden White House to cancel student debt for older student debtors. This is an excerpt from a video produced by the Debt Collective.
President Biden still has full authority to free elders of these debts before Trump takes power.
The only thing that's standing between us and student loan relief is political will.
But I think the broken system is what put us here. Advocating for myself and the other people in the Debt Collective is the reason I am here today.
We give billionaires a slap on the wrist and bail them out. It's time to bail out struggling working people.
If Biden doesn't use his powers, millions will die in debt.
There's going to be an army of seniors who are having their Social Security garnished for their student loans, and that social safety net that's been in place for so long, people are going to be in poverty.
There is a provision, federal claims collection provision 902.2, that will allow the president to eliminate the debt even if there are legal challenges. And so we're here to let the senators know about it.
Federal Claims Provision 902.2 allows government agencies to cancel debt based on the debtor's age. Essentially, the federal government knows these debts will never be paid and will simply be discharged when people pass away.
It is the right thing to do, especially for an older debtor. It's the right thing to do.
A new video from the Debt Collective. We're joined now by Astra Taylor, co-founder of the collective. Her new piece for The Nation is headlined, "It's Still Not Too Late for Biden to Deliver Debt Relief." She's also a filmmaker and author of several books. Astra, we only have a few minutes. This is such a critical issue right now. Explain what you're saying Biden has it in his power to do. You're going to the White House in a few days once again to talk to the folks there.
Yes, this is a titanic moment for the Biden administration. They have crashed into the authoritarian iceberg of the Trump administration, and it is their duty to fill as many lifeboats as possible, to do what they can to protect us on multiple fronts. Student debt relief is the one I know well. There are many legal mechanisms, long-established legal authorities, that the Biden administration can use to issue group discharges for people who have ironclad claims to debt relief. This is work the Biden administration should have done on day one, make no mistake. But as we have a limited number of days, they need to get to work and do this. You know, we're pushing against stereotypes. There's the stereotype of the student debtor as privileged, right, as upwardly mobile. The fact is that the vast majority of student debtors, especially the people in the most distress, went to for-profit colleges, where they are systematically defrauded. I hear a very deep resonance with the previous guest. And when you turn over public goods to the profit motive, terrible things happen. So these are schools that target vulnerable borrowers, first-generation students, single parents, veterans, disabled folks, and bury them in debt for worthless degrees. These people have strong claims, and the Biden administration has a backlog of over 400,000 applications for debt relief for these folks. And Senator Edward Markey and Dick Durbin and 70 other representatives have signed a letter saying cancel the debt for these folks. And then there are also older debtors who, contrary to stereotypes, are the fastest growing demographic of student debtors. Every quarter, there are more and more older folks in debt. People are aging into their student loans, not aging out. 9 million older debtors over the age of 50 owe $400 billion. They're going to get relief when they die. Not to be morbid, but it's coming. Why not let them retire in dignity by canceling this debt? Because we know once Trump is in office, their hopes are dashed.
So explain that, when Trump is in office. Project 2025 and the far right push against student debt relief. Talk about what their plan is. And President Biden saying he tried, but courts stopped him.
It's, you know, unfortunately, the Democrats have set the Republicans up for success. We've been organizing since the Occupy Wall Street era, pushing first for for-profit borrowers and then broadening our demands out for student debtors more broadly with the horizon of total student loan abolition and free college for all. We think college needs to be free as in price and free as in aimed at freedom. It's a public good. Unfortunately, the Democrats have only sort of tweaked at the margins, are, you know, very insistent on making individuals file for relief one by one instead of tackling this issue. And we saw this, we've seen this movie before. We were organizing under the Obama administration, and what we saw was that student debtors were thrown to the wolves. And that, the first time around, Donald Trump made very clear that it was his priority to stop student debt relief and to also embolden the for-profit college industry. And you know, we're seeing right now, in advance of January 20th, when he takes power, we're seeing the stock of those for-profit education companies going up. So we, Project 2025 is very clear that they want to end student debt cancellation, that they want to privatize public education. And in fact, we won't be talking about abolishing student loans. We'll be talking about abolishing the Department of Education. And so it's extremely serious. You know, people need to keep organizing. That's what the Debt Collective is going to do as the, you know, in the years ahead. But right now, it is incumbent on the Biden administration that they fill those lifeboats, that they grant clemency to debtors who have done nothing wrong and whose lives are being destroyed.
The Biden administration has granted some $175 billion in student debt relief to about 5 million borrowers. Mm-hmm. But you say in The Nation that even these numbers are deceiving.
Yeah. These numbers are deceiving. Well, first off, much of this debt relief was issued through programs that already existed that they fixed to some degree, for example, public service loan forgiveness or income-driven repayment programs. But these were pre-existing mechanisms that the government should make work. I mean, public service loan forgiveness is actually a George W. Bush-era program. So, well, we cheer every instance of debt cancellation for nurses, for teachers, for other public servants. It's the bare minimum. And unfortunately, sometimes the reality doesn't match the press release. So there was a big to-do about debt cancellation for students from Corinthian colleges, which is something we've been working on for a decade. The fact is that over 100,000 people have not actually gotten that promised relief. So there is a real problem with implementation, with matching deeds with words with the Democrats. And I think it's actually a parable about the problems with how the Democrats govern more broadly. You know, this speaks to a bigger problem than just student debt relief, which is having the courage of your convictions, actually governing to the full ability of your authorities. Again, there's a Swiss Army knife of legal tools that the Biden administration can use to cancel debt relief. They should be using them all as boldly as they can.
So what are they telling you at the White House? You've been there several times.
Well, we've been told that for-profit debtors in particular have strong, irrefutable claims to debt relief. So that makes us wonder, well, then where is it? Again, a backlog of 400,000 applications and many more people who are defrauded by these schools. We have seen the headlines that said that in the administration's final sprint that student debt relief is a priority. We're going to try to keep pushing them to make that happen. People should call the representatives, call the White House, say that this is important. And it's important in part because it's one of the things that can't be undone. Once that debt cancellation is delivered to the people who deserve it, it's going to be there. It's going to change their lives.
We're in a very unusual climate right now, where you have the alleged assassin of the head of United Health, the United Health CEO. You have him being hailed a hero by some because it has opened up this enormous backlash, outcry against the health industry and insurance. Do you see student debt in the same way?
Absolutely. The Debt Collective is a union of debtors, and we organize across debt types. We also organize with medical debtors who are pushing for public universal health care. We are also organizing renters who are pushing for a model of housing provision that's not based on profit. So we see these debt types as all connected, and many student debtors have medical debt. In fact, 100 million people in this country have medical debt. And that's part of why people are so frustrated, right? That's part of why people are using this moment to express their frustration with systems that profit from people's pain, their sickness, their poverty. And so this is something that we've been organizing around, doing different campaigns for medical debt relief. But this is urgent.
We only have a minute to go. In this last month that President Biden is in office, you're saying he should use this moment to support a number of issues, including abortion funds around the country. Explain.
Yes, the debt collective this week just announced that we're erasing $50,000 of abortion debt, which is a horrible phrase that people probably never heard before, but it's becoming a reality post-Dobbs, which is the decision that overturned Roe v. Wade. So without a constitutionally enshrined right to abortion, what's happening? There are fewer opportunities for care because providers are being shut down. And so people are having to travel further, which can cost $1,500, $1,600, $2,000 to travel. So abortion funds are in crisis. And what we're hearing anecdotally is that providers are saying, put your abortion on a payday loan, put on a credit card, borrow money from your family. So this is something that this is a new dimension to the crisis of reproductive health justice. We believe abortion debt is medical debt. It should all be abolished. Abortion is health care. Health care should be free. And that the Biden administration should do what it can to pardon abortion providers in advance of the Trump administration.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us, Astra Taylor, co-founder and organizer of the Debt Collective. We'll link to your piece in The Nation. It's still not too late for Biden to deliver debt relief. Coming up, the Bibi files, as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is on trial for corruption. We'll look at this new film with the film's Oscar-winning producer, Alex Gibney. Stay with us. By Bella Fleck, Zakir Hussain, and Edgar Meyer. Hussain passed away Sunday at the age of 73. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The official death toll in Gaza has topped 45,000. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is fighting a different battle inside Israeli courts. The first sitting Israeli prime minister to face criminal charges, he's finally taking the stand at his long-running corruption trial. The case has gone on for years. He's charged with fraud, breach of trust, accepting bribes in three separate cases. We turn now to an extraordinary new documentary that offers an in-depth look into the charges against Netanyahu, featuring leaked footage of police interrogations of Netanyahu himself, his wife Sarah, and those accused of bribing him. This is the trailer to the Bibi files.
Our first question for you is whether you or any of your family members have received any gifts or favors from wealthy businessmen in the last decade.
This is preposterous and insane. You're trying to incriminate the prime minister on nonsense.
Case, the facts are really simple. The prime minister and his wife are getting gifts.
It's a total lie.
And on the other side, Netanyahu did favors.
We must find a way to reward him.
What do you need to reward the prime minister for?
Government officials are not allowed to take gifts. This is corruption. The police, they investigated everybody.
If this comes out, I'm dead.
What did you get?
Champagne, cigars, shalsheret, tabac.
Sarah Netanyahu is very important. Both of them never surrendered, never compromised.
My husband is the strongest prime minister we've ever had.
They start to believe that they are untouchable.
after the catastrophe of the 7th of October, the war became another instrument to stay in power.
When people serve for too long, it gets into their head.
The indictment made him dependent on the extreme right in Israel.
He's now captive to their whims.
This is nonsense.
Put all Israel in the turmoil.
Netanyahu is the architect of chaos.
He survived in a state of war. He survived in a state of instability.
It's not a cover-up.
He tried to kill the system.
Nobody is above the law.
Do you remember that line from The Godfather?
If your friends close, keep your enemies closer.
That's the trailer for the Bibi Files, leaked secret footage of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The new documentary, The Bibi Files, is directed by Alexis Bloom and produced by Alex Gibney. The Bibi Files cannot be legally distributed in Israel due to privacy laws. For more, we're joined by filmmaker Alex Gibney. In 2008, he won an Oscar for his film Taxi to the Dark Side, about an Afghan man who was tortured in prison at Bagram. Thanks so much for being with us again, Alex. I went to see this film the other night at the theater. This is powerful. Explain why in this trailer we can't see Netanyahu's face in these deposition tapes, and how did you get these deposition tapes when he, his wife, his son Yair, and others are being questioned by police?
Okay, I'll answer the hi, Amy. Answer the questions in reverse. I was leaked these tapes. They're interrogation videotapes done by the police that were a precursor to the indictment of Netanyahu on corruption charges. And in the tapes, you can see Netanyahu, his wife Sara, his son Yair, and many of the people who attempted to bribe Netanyahu. I thought they were explosive and very important. This, by the way, was before 10-7 or the war on Gaza. This is when there was a big crisis over the judicial reform attempts by Netanyahu, which, of course, were done in part so he could elude any consequence from, impending bribery charges. But the key thing to understand about distribution in Israel is when I got these leaked tapes, I made a promise to the source that I would not distribute the film in Israel because the source could go to prison. There are privacy laws that make it mandatory that if you are photographed as part of an official proceeding, i.e. a police interrogation, you can't cause those videotapes to be released. So unless you get the permission of Netanyahu and Sarah, et cetera, which wasn't going to happen. So anyway, that is the occasion of why these things can't be, this film can't be released, and why we had to, black bar the trailer in order so that the trailer wouldn't be freely visible. I couldn't cause the trailer to be freely visible in Israel, though I should say that it's being widely pirated there.
So Netanyahu is going after you?
Netanyahu, as soon as it was announced that we were going to premiere at the Toronto Film Festival, he went to an Israeli court and tried to stop the screening in Toronto. Now, how that was going to happen, I don't know. But in any event, it was denied. But he certainly tried to stop us. And I understand the Netanyahu administration, through a number of mechanisms, are trying very hard to go after a guy named Raviv Drucker, who's one of the producers of the film and is a longtime Israeli journalist who has an expertise in this kind of corruption, has been the bane of a number of prime ministers, but particularly Netanyahu.
Let's go to another clip from the Bibi Files. It begins with Ami Ayalon, the former head of Israel's internal security service, Shin Bet.
And after the catastrophe of the 7th of October, the war became another instrument to stay in power. He survived in a state of war. He survived in a state of instability. He survived when we fight each other. He survived when our enemies fight each other.
forever war is beneficial to Netanyahu. This makes people feel like they are always in danger, like they always need him. There's always some huge threat. I think that that helps him remain prime minister.
That last voice, the young Israeli woman, Gili Schwartz, is from Kibbutz Be'eri, where more than 100 people were killed on October 7th last year. Alex, if you can elaborate on what they are saying. I mean, as we speak, Netanyahu is in court in Israel right now. What this means, they say he wants to wage wider war because otherwise he's no longer going to be protected by the prime ministership, by being prime minister.
That's right. I mean, I think, strictly speaking, this is a film about corruption, and it starts with petty corruption, being bribed with gifts and cigars, champagne, jewelry. But then the ultimate corruption is how he's tried to elude a reckoning for his misdeeds. And in so doing, he wraps himself in the mantle of prime minister and then wages endless war. Now, I can't think of really anything more corrupt than somebody who's administering the killing of women and children in order to be able to stay in power. But that is what they are alleging, and that is what the film is about.
Let's go to another clip from the BB Files. This one begins with Prime Minister Netanyahu addressing the U.S. Congress this past July.
Together we shall defend our common civilization. Together we shall secure a brilliant future for both our nations.
I would say that, tragically, the Americans don't know how to call him out. There was no plan for ending the war of Gaza, bringing the hostages home, and changing dynamics in the region. And things only got worse. Netanyahu is the architect of chaos. And as we speak, when all eyes are on the front in Gaza and the front in Lebanon, he is implementing his plan in the West Bank with the extreme right. He may create a situation where it's irreversible.
And that's Nimrod Novick, former advisor to Shimon Peres in the BB Files, the documentary produced by Alex Gibney, who's with us now. So talk about how this trial plays out right now. I think most people in the United States aren't even aware. I mean, you have the horror in Gaza. You have what's now taking place in Syria, what's happening in Lebanon. Explain how this all fits in.
Well, this is a trial that's been going on for 4 years. Netanyahu has been trying to elude a reckoning related to these charges for that much time. And what he constantly does is to wrap himself in the mantle of leadership. And so what better way to do that? And this is a tried and true political formula, as grisly and as grotesque as it is to wage war, is to continue to use weapons and say we're in danger of being annihilated, so we must strike back. But I mean, the destruction that's going on in Gaza, for example, is a kind of wanton destruction at this point that is just beyond any kind of moral reckoning. So I think that also the United States bears some responsibility for this. That's why we included those clips of him at the Congress. You know, we supply Israel with so much aid and so much.
And to be clear, Sada, his wife, and when she's being questioned, she yells at the police and says, "Do you know how he's treated in the United States when he addresses a joint session of Congress?" Alex Gibney, we're going to have to leave it there. Academy Award-winning filmmaker and producer of The BB Files. His next film is about Luigi Mangione and the shooting of the UnitedHealthcare CEO. I'm Amy Goodman. Happy birthday, Jeff Stack.
Hey, this is Anuki, your Faculty of Environment representative, here to let you know what the SFSS is.
The SFSS is a student union that is student-led, and it represents and advocates for the interests of the 26,000 undergraduate students at SFU. We are a non-for-profit support network and a voice at SFU, which provides services like the UPass and health and dental. We also provide support to make your student life better. You can reach the SFSS on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or by emailing us. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you.